Hey, all you podcast listeners. Today, Marcus interviews Sadie Pullman. Sadie is an empowered woman doing absolutely amazing things. Unfortunately, when she was 20 years old, her mother passed away of breast cancer. She has chosen to honor her mother's memory by helping others through her charity work with the SAFE Foundation. On a side note, the SAFE Foundation is another inspiring story of empowered women, and you can check them out in our notes on our webpage. Sadie spreads the message of gender equality on a global scale, and you'll be able to hear in her voice just how her work has made her kindness, confidence, empathy, and courage really shine through. Her passion and conviction is evident in this interview, and she barely takes a breath when an hour goes by in such a short time while she tells us her story of empowerment and hope. She tells us that her favorite quote is, "When you can't find the sunshine, be the sunshine." Imagine what the world would be like if more people lived by this quote. The world definitely needs more people like Sadie. I hope you're inspired by her story. Our music was written and performed by She, spelled SH3, and produced by Android Beats. Check them out on our website. This podcast is sponsored by Femme Apparel. We believe in gender equality and use thought-provoking messaging to bring attention to gender disparity and to challenge the status quo to be more inclusive and equal. And with that, I'll hand you over to Marcus.
Hi.
Hi there, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Let me just...
Yeah, there we go.
Which way do you want my camera?
That's fine. The way you have it now is good.
So this way is the way I can put it into my holder.
That works.
Okay, fine. Cool.
Yeah. When you first came on, you were sideways, but now you're good.
Ah, okay. Perfect. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
I was going to say good morning, but I guess it's 2 in the afternoon there.
Oh my God, I forgot how early it is for you.
Yeah, it's 9 a.m., so I still have a coffee.
Yeah, morning coffee.
Mm-hmm. Has your weekend been good?
Yeah, it hasn't been too bad, actually. Just been getting on with a few things. It's my birthday next week, so I've ordered myself a few presents.
Oh, very nice.
I've been getting some makeup and stuff to play around with.
Awesome. So. Happy early birthday.
Thank you.
How are things there with everything that's going on with the pandemic and stuff?
I feel quite lucky because I'm managing to quarantine with my boyfriend. So normally we live long distance.
Oh, okay.
So for me, it's a little bit of a blessing in disguise because we're getting this opportunity and I can still work from home. So my day-to-day routine isn't that much different at the moment. But I have got friends that are small business owners or work for themselves, and I know they're really struggling at the moment.
It's tough, and it's
tough just being away from family as well. My dad wasn't very well at the beginning of all this, so I was really worried about him, but he made a recovery and that's fine. And I'm just trying to look for the positives, really. But it would be nice to see my family when I'm allowed to again.
Absolutely, yeah, it's hard.
How are you finding it?
Not bad. I mean, where we live, our specific area in Canada has been pretty, has had a low caseload. Like, not a lot of people have had it, but we're still obligated to follow the rules of the greater area, right? So, yeah, it's the same thing. Like, it would be nice to be able to go see people and go for dinners or, you know, do all the social things we're used to doing. But, you know, just got to wait, I guess.
It is what it is, yeah. I'm happy to carry on with what's going on until...
Absolutely. So, am I saying your name correctly? Sadie?
Sadie, yeah. That's right.
Okay, Sadie Pullman. So, thank you very much for joining us today. I really appreciate you taking the time. Why don't we just start with a brief introduction of yourself, who you are, Did you get the questions I sent you?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I sent you...
So this email has just come through to my junk. So I think it's...
Oh, okay.
So if you sent me another email, I haven't had a chance to look at it yet.
I just send them out ahead of time in case the guest wants to take a look at them. It's not a big deal if you didn't see them.
Yeah, that's fine.
But yeah, why don't we just start with a brief introduction, you know, where you live.
Okay, yeah. So I'm Sadie, I'm from Wales. So within Wales, I work as an underwriter for a credit insurance company. So lots of people always switch off when I start to explain what I do. It is interesting, I promise, but I won't go into too much details about that. But it's within the finance sector, and I run the oil, gas, and energy portfolio. So on my day-to-day, I'm analysing the risk of different companies within that sector. It's a very male-driven sector as well, so I often find that when I'm going to meetings with buyers, it's often I'm the only female in the room. I've actually spoken to another woman recently who worked within the sector, and she said how much she struggled over the years working in that sector. It's very male-dominant. And then on the side of that, I'm also involved with an amazing charity called the Safe Foundation. They do development work all around the world. I first got involved with them, oh God, it's been about seven, 8 years now. So I was this fresh-faced teenager, kind of looking for some positive to do. I'd recently had some bad news in my own life, and I was trying to find ways that were positive to spend my time. And I think I found helping other people also helped me deal with my own issues. So I got involved with them, and I went on a trip to Sierra Leone as a volunteer. And then I went again to another trip in India as a mentor, and I just went again on trips. And now I'm on the board of trustees, so I've kind of worked my way up there. And they do some amazing, amazing work, so it's a real privilege to be involved so heavily now with the charity, making such important decisions. And I really do hold that as one of my main passions.
Yeah, so you had in your bio, you had said that you had sort of a life turning moment in your late teens, 18 or 19 years old, I think you said. So what kind of impact did that have on you? And how did that push you to join the charity to want to make a difference?
Yeah. So I just finished my exams. I thought I was going to take a gap year, go traveling. I thought I was just going to absolutely enjoy a year of doing nothing, really. I didn't have any direction. I had things I was interested in, but there was nothing that really spoke to me. There was nothing I really thought, I really want to go and do this. I had a mother that absolutely encouraged me to do exactly what I want to do. But at that point, I just felt a bit directionless, really. So I went on this girls' holiday after exams. I just thought I was going to have the best summer. And I came back and I got hit with some unfortunate news that my mum wasn't very well. She'd been diagnosed with breast cancer. So for me, I was 18 years old, expecting to have absolutely no responsibilities or cares in the world for the next year. And then I got hit with this massive thing that I don't think that you're ever ready for a piece of news like that at any age. And as I've got older, I always felt really hard done by when I was younger, and thought it was, I think when you're in the moment, you just think no one understands, it's worse for you than it is for anyone else. But as I get older, I realise that I've got friends now at this age dealing with it, and it's just as hard. I've got people in my life that are much older dealing with loss, and it's just as hard. And I think the only difference was at that age, there was so much I expected to be able to do. And that was kind of taken away from me as well in that moment, because I didn't think that me doing the things I wanted to do was as important anymore, because I wanted to be there for her. So I ended up taking the gap year to work. So at that point, she moved out, and I had to live with myself and my brother lived together for a year. But obviously then I had bills to pay, and adulthood hit me so much sooner than I thought it was going to. And I just had to grow up. I had to grow up very quickly. So I had to get a job, I paid my bills, struggled through that year, and then I went to university. And I stayed close to home. So I did an early years in education degree. So I picked it through clearing. So it wasn't even something that I always thought I wanted to do. So through that, it was my degree that made me realise I had a passion for working with younger people and children as well. But kind of just before I went to university, I had this opportunity. So I was volunteering with my local youth group. I was teaching skating, drama classes. I was teaching all sorts of different things. I was trying heavily to get girls involved. So lots of the sporty stuff particularly was a bit of a struggle because girls didn't want to join in the area. So that was something I really wanted to tackle. And through working with that community group, they then partnered with the Safe Foundation. They wanted to send a group of NEETs. So that stands for Not in Education, Employment or Training. So at that point, I had a job, but it was a 0-hour contract. So my hours are very up and down. Some weeks I could have 40 hours. The next week they could say, there's nothing for me. And then I would just be struggling for money. So I then qualified in that category because I hadn't gone off to uni yet. And I interviewed. I just thought it was a good idea. Someone put me forward for it. I interviewed and then they selected me. And then we had this training program before we went where they teach you how to present the different programs they had. So we taught about HIV, AIDS, life skills, nutrition, and then gender equality. So gender equality at this point was something I probably subconsciously knew about because there were certain things that had happened in my teenage years, certain things, particularly a few unpleasant circumstances with other boys or men. I subconsciously knew there probably was a bit of an imbalance because of ways I'd been treated in the past, but it wasn't something I'd actively thought about and thought about changing until that point. And I, in the process of learning how to teach this program, I learned so much myself. And it really woke me up to not only issues that we have here in Wales, which is quite, you know, in the grand scheme of things, isn't that terrible a place for it. But when I was thinking about some of the countries we would be going to, particularly in Sierra Leone, there was this kind of gender imbalance. And there was this difference. And some of the girls that then I met on the trip, again, would have no concept of this being an issue, but you'd ask them questions and some of the questions were quite hard hitting. So some of them would be as simple as, do you think men and women are equal? If you think that's a true statement, put up your hand. And no one would put up their hand. And for me, someone who'd been raised by this strong mother and all these female role models around me, I never would have said that as a kid. I always would have thought, well, yeah, of course we're equal. I would have fought my brother till the end of the year to, you know, show him that I was as big and tough as him when we were younger. So it was quite hard hitting, even just having the simple questions. And then we'd ask some deeper ones again. And one of the questions was, do you think it's okay for an older family member to do this or say this? And we gave certain scenarios of you know, examples that are really behaviour that is not acceptable, you know, in any shape or form. And they'd say, yes, that is okay, because they're a senior man in my life. And they would say, yes, that's fine. And that's just what was in...
Wow.
In their mentality, in their way of thinking. And I'm
sorry, these were the people that were volunteering with you, or these were the people you were helping?
This was the beneficiaries. This was the children in the school. Okay. So right, these were really, really young girls. We didn't have an exact age group, because one of the other sad things about it was, is when we had got there, it'd been around 10, 11 years since the Civil War. And that was around the age group we were teaching. So lots of the children had lost parents and they didn't actually know this specific age. So we didn't have a set age group, but it was around that age, 10, 11, 12. And they would say these behaviours are fine. And they would think that if a senior man in their life, or even any man really, had asked them to do something that they weren't comfortable with, that was normal and fine and they should oblige. And for me, that was a huge wake-up call to how I say sheltered. Again, I'd had my own circumstances in the past that were not very nice, and I'm sure any woman, if you've asked her in the past, will have faced some type of inappropriate behaviour from a man. How severe that is, you know, it's different each time, but it's there and it happens everywhere. But for young children to be saying that, I just thought it was mind-boggling to me. And I think that was the point that I was like, wow, I can't ignore this. I can't go back from this trip and just leave it there. That's one trip and I'm done. I connected with these people. I connected with these children and these girls, and I wanted them to go on and achieve whatever they wanted to. And I didn't want to just engage with one group of girls. I wanted to tell women everywhere across the world how important and valuable they are, because not every woman knows, and that's really sad. That's really sad for me.
How long were you there for?
So it's only a very short project. So it's 2 weeks at a time when they send groups out. But we have an ongoing partnership. So the same school will get different groups going out yearly.
So it was a powerful 2 weeks then.
Yeah, it was very intense. Very, very, yeah, very intense. One of the sessions was very hard hitting, and it was an agony aunt session. And we just got the children to write down to their aunt whatever they wanted to. This was part of their life skills and understanding their feelings and emotions and being comfortable to talk about it. We didn't make the children show us what they wrote. We didn't ask them to read anything to us. It was personal to them. But some of the girls at the end did want to come and share with me what they'd written and wanted to speak to me, which was great, because that was the whole point of the session, for them to be comfortable to talk about it. But suddenly, again, I was only 18, maybe turning 9. No, I was around 18 at that point. I had these, you know, stories that I couldn't even comprehend. And you do hear about terrible stuff going on, but I almost think it's not turning a blind eye, but we just don't realize how real it is until we have someone telling us, this has happened to me, and you know, is this right? Asking me, is this right? Is this okay? And luckily, it wasn't just me. They had a whole team of great people, and as well as the volunteers, we had mentors and a team leader that, you know, are heavily involved in the charity. So when we needed advice as well, you know, it wasn't just all down to us. There was people that had been training a much longer period than us, and there was a lot of support and resource there. And we also, while we're there, give all of our resources to the school and to the teachers so they can keep on teaching those lessons once we've gone, and we can provide ongoing communication to support those lessons then. But it was a real, real eye-opener, and it's something I wish everyone could experience, because it was just crazy to me. And we came back just before Christmas, and suddenly I've come from this place where people just have nothing, and everyone's worrying about what Christmas presents to buy, and oh, the house hasn't got enough decorations, oh, but I don't think I spent enough on this person. And it just was like, it just put things into perspective for me massively, and it was something that I wanted to do again. And then around a year and a half later, the opportunity arose for a new mentor, and they wanted someone that had previously been on one of the trips as a volunteer to progress to that level. And I interviewed again at that stage and was successful. So I got to take a new group of volunteers and watch them go on this journey and guide them and support them. And that was another incredible experience, because it wasn't just then going to help the students. So this was a project in India now, but it was a similar setup in terms of what we were teaching. But we didn't do HIV/AIDS. We covered issues that were more relevant to that area that we were going. So we had malaria and things like that. And I got to not only help those, but it was suddenly this group of people that were just as lost as I was. They were out of work. Again, it was a neat project, so they're out of work, education, employment, didn't know what the next steps were. And I watch them find this passion and open up to this whole new world. So and then the journey progresses, and everyone who goes on these trips ends up staying connected and safe in some way or another, does fundraising for them. It's just, it's infectious. I just don't think you can go and see this and not want to continue to help.
So if there was a young woman who was considering doing this, but she was perhaps getting pushback from family, because I'm sure the perception is it could be dangerous, right, to going into potentially dangerous areas.
Yeah, that's right.
Would you encourage the family to support the person?
I would, 100%. There is no experience like this. You can go and travel the world. You can travel to safe places and anything can happen. You can travel down to the end of your street and something bad can happen. We see every day, you know, the bad things can happen everywhere. I felt incredibly safe on all of my experiences there. Any charity you go with, I would suggest doing your research, because there are a lot of different charities and there are a lot of different companies that organise these types of trips. So I would suggest making sure you do your research. I can only speak for the Safe Foundation, which I know has always kept all of the volunteers completely safe. You have people there. In Sierra Leone, we actually had an armed guard at our lodge. So we do take safety very seriously. And all the volunteers have everything they need, and they have all the training and support, and there's always someone there for emotional support as well. So when I was a mentor, we all of the mentors kind of had their different roles and different fortes. So we teach gender equality through sports and things like that. So there was someone that's very good at, you know, sports, physical exercise, that type of thing. And my role then was to provide emotional support for the volunteers, because I had proven in my previous trip that that was something I was, you know, good at and good with, and very in touch with my emotions. I mean, probably too much sometimes. I get very, very emotional about a lot of things, and it's because I really do care. My boyfriend will always say to me, you know, you can't let it get to you so much, or you can only do so much. He tries to tell me, you've done this, you've done this, you're helping in the ways you can. You can't stress yourself out, because I always want to do more.
Is that something that you have to work on? Is that like I don't want to say a negative, but is that just something that you always have to be aware of when you're entering these situations? Like, is it possible to get too emotionally involved in the situation?
I think it is. And we definitely, when we go on these trips, we have set boundaries, very clear boundaries set to the volunteers in terms of, you know, how engaged to get on a personal level. There are a lot, I won't go into the ins and outs, but we have a very big structure of a lot of boundaries we need to have. So I've always followed those boundaries. But then I think it's when you come away and you're by yourself, that's probably when I do get a bit overwhelmed at times, because it's hard not to. And I think, especially on my first trip, when it was something that I was thrown into, and I found that I was given some of the more emotionally challenging activities to teach, because they did say they recognized in me that, you know, that I understand people, and that I think you do have to be very compassionate. I think you have to be very you just have to have this ability to connect with people, and I think I do have that. There's a way you act on the role, and then there's a way you act when you get home. And I think a challenge for me is that I do need to draw a line sometimes. But I think when you care about something so much, it is difficult, because I tell myself, oh, today is going to be a relaxation day for me. I'm not, you know, I haven't got work. I haven't got a meeting for Safe Foundation. I haven't got all of these things. I'm going to take a me day. And then I'll scroll through social media, and I'll see a post, and I realise something else is terrible is happening in the world, and then I'll be like, well, how can I help with this? What positions can I find? Who can I contact? So I think when you care about something so much, it's almost replaced having hobbies. It's almost like, this is how I spend my free time, almost. And I think that's why it's important I have a job away from this as well. Lots of people ask me, well, if you love this so much, why don't you get a job in the charity sector? For me, I feel like I'm doing what I need to be doing with the Safe Foundation as a trustee. I still think it is important to me to have my other job, just so you have something separating it, because otherwise it does get very overwhelming. It's balance. And I also have had counselling sessions myself. So last year I was very, very fortunate that my employer is really, really great and very supportive. And I came to them and said I was feeling a little bit overwhelmed. I said it's not work related. I think a lot of people have the problem where they take work home with them. I said I feel the opposite. I feel like things are getting a bit stressful in my personal life, and I feel like I'm bringing it to work, and I don't want to do that. So they then arranged for me to speak to someone and have some sessions. So that was, you know, that made me feel very valued and supported. And I know that's not something that everyone gets to have. So I'm very aware of the things that I get that I'm so grateful and lucky for that other people don't get to have. And that was something, you know, that have been addressing and working on is not taking everything too much and not being too emotional.
On that, I'll admit I have not done volunteering like you have in this space, but and maybe not just for you, but for all volunteers, when you come from we'll call it a comfortable environment like yeah. I am or like you are, is there ever a feeling of guilt or shame, but do you like feel like almost like guilty that you have what you have and then you're helping people that have so little, and does that weigh on you in any way?
I mean, it's something that now I think I manage quite well, but certainly on your first experience of it, when you're not really knowing what to expect, and when you're training, it's very much, even though you're being, you know, told, so we have that as part of our training with our volunteers, we tell them to expect to feel like that. It's something we're very aware of, especially certain trips. So if you go around Christmas time and things like that, it's so relevant. So it's something that we do have as part of our training, but I think until you go and actually feel it, it almost just feels like, oh, I'm going to go and do this incredible trip. This is going to be amazing for me. Oh, I'm getting to do this amazing thing. And then suddenly you get there and it's not about you at all. It's about the people you're helping. And I did. It's something you have to deal with, but it comes as part of the job. I think if you're going to help people that are less fortunate than you in any type of way, there is always a time you're going to feel guilty. But you do have to remember you can only do so much. And that I think practicing gratitude for the things you have is very important, because it's not a case of, oh, then I shouldn't have anything. It's a case of we wish those people had what we have, and we'll do what we can to work towards a world in which that's possible. And you just do have to be, you have to switch your mindset to be grateful for the things you have rather than feel guilty. But it definitely did happen to me at the beginning. And I know a lot of the other volunteers felt the same. It's just inevitable.
Yeah, I can imagine it would be quite a shock, I would think, when you first are introduced to it. So
yeah.
Having gone through these experiences, now when you bring that back into your, we'll call it your regular day job, and you're sitting in a boardroom, is it a lot easier to just deal with the macho bullshit that these gas and oil guys might bring to the table after having experienced or having seen what other people are experiencing? Like, has it empowered you and how you handle your situations in your regular job?
I'd say I feel empowered, but I think feeling empowered is a bit of an amalgamation of all of my experience, and not just the charity work. I think I've been quite fortunate to have such a great employer, so I don't feel like there is any type of, you know, gap within my employment. My employer is very good, and I'm seeing females around me get promotions and progress, and I have a lot of female role models within my company. So awesome. my actual yeah, my actual company, I can't fault them, and I feel really grateful to work for them because they are great. And I've never felt like in certain meetings that, you know, anyone specifically has not, you know, not responded well to me because I'm a woman. But I have been aware of other stories, not necessarily within my company, but you know, for me, it doesn't make a difference. I just go in and I do what I need to do. I know that I'm good at my job. And I just get it done. And once you get going, I just don't think that you realise all of this might have been in the background. But I think my empowerment and my confidence stems from a lot of things I've done in my life, not just the charity work. I think the charity work has really brought me a lot of valuable skills, and it's helped me to be emotionally intelligent and deal with situations. So I think that's useful. But in terms of my confidence, I've always been raised by my mother to be who I am, stand up for what's right. She's always raised me to be someone who values myself. And I've been through periods where I haven't. Like we all do. We all have periods where we compare ourselves to others. We all have periods where we think, oh, I'm not doing well. I've had periods in work countless times where I've had a bad day and I thought, oh, I'm you know, awful at this job. I'm not doing well. But I have this kind of core root of me that says, no, I'm rational, you're being stupid, and you are powerful, you are intelligent, you can do this. Another thing that I think contributes heavily is that the fact I do pageants. And I know that can be controversial, and I know a lot of women, including friends and people I know, don't always understand why I would do it and don't always agree with the premise. And I think there's a lot of stereotyping when it comes to a pageant girl. But for me, I entered this community of absolutely incredible women from all over the UK. I've met people from internationally as well who pageantry, but from all over the UK that I would never have met. I started pageants, so in terms of a timeline then, so at 18, I found out my mum wasn't very well. At that point, I started to do my Safe Foundation work, and I was already doing these, you know, these incredible things, and I was already working towards helping people. And then around 20, I was looking for more ways. How can I expand? So I'm doing this for the Safe Foundations, but how can I further the platform? How can I promote this cause? How can I promote this cause? And I saw on a TV program about Miss England, it was. And I thought, I didn't know the pageants were a real thing. I think I'd seen it on perhaps American TV, or I'd seen it on films, and I was like, oh, this is something that actually, you know, exists. And in the program, I saw all these women coming together and doing all these different activities and challenges, and I was like, well, does this exist in Wales? So I googled it, and Miss Wales did exist, and I just sent an application, and I forgot about it. I was like, whether, you know, I didn't know about what it would be, what a massive world it would turn out to be. And I got an interview from application, and I passed the interview, and I got through then to the final. And we just did such incredible things. For those people who don't know, and it's different for different pageants, but it's never just final. It's never just, oh, you turn up on a day, you walk on stage, the prettiest girl gets the crown. It's just that, because I know that's what people have told me they think it is. It's not that at all. You have months and months and months, if not a whole year, to prepare. And that preparation involves fundraising. It involves organising events. It involves promoting different causes. We get set challenges with Miss Wales regularly. If another relevant, something relevant comes up, you know, they change with the times, and they go with what's current. And I'm currently competing in Miss Wales now as well. I've come back all these years later because it's something that I felt so strongly about when I did it. I just felt the need to come back. It's the last year I can compete age wise, so I just thought to come full circle. It's great to come back. But we've just done incredible things. We have an empowerment day. During the empowerment day, when I first competed, I met someone incredible called Harry Singer. He's been a, you know, a great mentor in my life. And through that, I actually won a prize called the Spirit of Miss Wales Award, which is given out the night before. So that's directly given by the director. She picks a girl that she thinks has, before the finals even happen. So this is being judged on, you know, what you've done in the build up and who embodies, you know, the Miss Wales brand. And she picked me for my inspirational story. During the time from when I signed up and the time I competed, because it is a very long gap, a lot can change, my mum actually passed away. And the one thing I'll never forget is we had all of these things planned for the following week, and I messaged the director and I said, I'm going to have to drop out, just go on without me for those events. She said, whatever you decide is up to you, but she sent me, you know, encouragement of what I've done well, condolences. She said, take your time, we'll hold off these events. If you decide you don't want to do it, that's absolutely up to you, but if you do decide you want to do it, I don't want you to have missed out, so we'll all wait, like I'll message the girls. And she just stopped everything for me, and I just never felt, it was just this value. It was a feeling of being valued. And for anyone who thinks that pageantry is impersonal and it's all about looks, it was really valuing who I was and what I was going through. And the directors and judges do this with all the girls. And I know from being on the inside, every girl who's competed will say this, we feel valued, and it's not for looks, it's for who we are. Whoever wins the crown. No one, you know, the rest of us have just come away with a great experience. But for me, it was really entering this community, and it is a community of incredible women who have supported me for years, whatever venture I go on, whatever I suddenly decide to promote on social media, I'll have everyone jumping on it saying, this is fantastic, how can I help, what do you need me to do? And we all really support each other, and that's in real life, that's not just pageantry, that's if one of my friends starts a business, or someone, you know, creates a charity, or a cause, or, you know, anything. We'll all support each other. And for me, that really is female empowerment and women sticking together, women supporting women. So I've been very fortunate to be in this community. And I encourage people, you know, to consider it if they haven't before. But I also understand it's not for everyone. And there is a certain fashion to it. I try and describe this to my friends.
Yeah, we've actually now come across more interactions with people involved in the pageantry community.
Oh, have you?
And it's honestly, I think the pageantry industry has a public relations issue, because what people think versus the reality of who the contestants really are, night and day. Yeah. Night and day. There are amazing women doing amazing things, and everybody, not everybody, but there is the general misconception that it's a nightgown or a bathing suit walking down a runway.
Yeah.
Is so.
I mean, Miss World doesn't even have that. Miss World doesn't even have a swimsuit round anymore. They got rid of that years ago. I do think that what happens is certain press, certain media outlets and articles find it easier to focus on you know, the dresses, the swimsuits. I know some still do swimsuits. And because the press then focuses on that, the people reading think that the pageant world only focuses on that. But it's not. It's the people looking in that normally place those stereotypes or normally make those judgments or only focus on our looks.
Because sex sells and it's an easier way to...
Yeah. And because other people looking in only notice those things, or those things they think about us, it's not even things we think about ourselves. So if they notice that about us, they think that's all it is. If the world took the time to get to know us the way the pageant world did, they'd understand how incredible it was. I completely appreciate it's not for everyone. And people always say to me, if you love charity work, why can't you do charity work away from pageants? And I say, I do. I've been doing it long before I enter pageants, and I have the Safe Foundation, and then through the pageants I get to do more, and I get to engage with more charities and more people who need help, and people just don't seem to understand why you need that. And I think, of course, you can go out and do these things without pageants, and I encourage everyone, if you're not into the dresses, if you're not into the hair and makeup, there are other groups and other ways to get involved in charity work. But if you do enjoy those things as well, and it is a bit of fun, then why not do it? And then at the end, you get to have that day. So for lots of us, we just find the final, you know, a bit of fun, a chance to go on stage. And it does build your confidence going on stage. I mean, I was petrified the first time I did it. And it's a really empowering feeling to get up there and say, this is me. You get to the end and you say, I've worked hard for months and months. This is who I am. Like, see me who I am. It's not, look at my dress. It's not, oh, look at the makeup that someone else has just done on me because I don't even know how to do it myself. It's, you know, it's see who I am. And everyone in the audience understands that because they've taken the time to come and watch it. But I think, unfortunately, the message gets lost in translation, you know, as it does for lots of things. But I do think that there is an issue between pageants and the press, and if some of the, you know, news outlets decided to take the time, you know, to get to know what it is the girls keep coming back for, because we do keep coming back, we do keep entering, and there's a reason for that. You know, if we were obsessed with the looks and those types of things, you can go on your social media outlets and do that, and, you know, there's other outlets. The reason we keep coming back to pageants is not for the opportunity to stand in a dress and, you know, look glamorous. I can do that any day I want. I've done that, you know, during lockdown, and I've got nowhere to go. I've been checking on, you know, my hair and makeup and taking pictures or whatever. I can do that anywhere. The reason we go back to pageants is because we get so much from it ourselves, and we get to create so much good for other people. And it's just, again, there's no feeling like helping a cause. For me, that's my drive. That's my drive for everything.
Like the stage and the presentation, and that's just such a small part, right? Like the smallest tiny part, really. There's everything else leads up to that, right?
Of course, it's tiny.
That's really cool. So, you know, I mean, obviously you said it's not for everybody, but if somebody was looking to get into it, what would you say their motivation for it should be in order for them to be successful and to get something out of it?
So my advice, and I do have girls message me on social media and ask, how did you get into it? Can you give me advice? Or I've had girls message me, oh, I want to enter a pageant, but I'm not pretty enough. And I'm just like, oh, no, that's not what it's about. I'm like, first of all, you're beautiful inside and out. Second of all, if you're going to enter a pageant, the very first thing you need to do is ask yourself why. Why are you entering? What do you want to get out of it? If the only reason you want to enter a pageant is because you want to wear a crown, you won't get anywhere with it. It'll be transparent to the judges. It'll be transparent to the people you want, you know, that are watching you. It'll be obvious. You know, you can't just turn up on the day and win. You just won't do it. And obviously, every girl competing dreams of winning, because, you know, it's almost like getting an award for all of your hard work. You know, everyone wants to feel appreciated and acknowledged. It's human nature. So I think everyone competing would love to win. But if that's the only reason you're entering, then don't. And that's what I say to everyone. If your intentions for competing are positive, and when I say this, I know not everyone, I know everyone competes for different reasons. For me, my motivation is I want a platform to raise awareness for certain causes. By this point now, I am, you know, I'm 25, about to turn 26. I know what I care about and I know what I'm passionate about, and I speak very openly about it. So having that platform is very useful for someone like me, because it's not just going out to my small amount of followers, it's going out to Miss Wales followers, it's going out to the pageant world, that gets shared by all the people in the community. It's very, very useful. It's a really useful tool. And I know for other girls, and I know for other girls, it might be that they want to get into some sort of career that might be, you know, valuable to go and have these experiences. I think it ties in really well with performing arts, things like that. And people are scared on stage, so doing something like this gives you opportunity to do that. It can be, you know, it doesn't have to be that you only want to do it because you really want to get involved with all these charity works. Obviously, if you're going to get involved, I would try and find something you care about, have an advocacy, like have something that you want to talk about. But it's also about having the opportunity to learn about yourself, to gain confidence, to make friends. When I first competed, my biggest motivation was the fact that I didn't have a lot of people around me because lots of my friends had moved away to university. I was already doing the charity work at this point, so I didn't need to enter to find out how to get involved with charity work. At that point, I just was craving friendship and community because I was struggling without it. So my motivation then is very different from my motivation now because I've grown and learned, and in different stages of your life, it's okay to need and want something different out of it. I would just write down why, and that's all you need to do. Write down why, and if you've got good intentions, apply. You can get someone to do your hair and makeup. You can watch tutorials. You can get a dress off a second-hand website. I've bought dresses for so cheap. There's a great Facebook group. You know, you don't have to spend loads of money. Like, you can learn how to do these things. My style's changed considerably since when I first started doing pageants, and just to highlight, I've never won, so that's not what's important to me. I think with Miss Wales, I am entering now thinking I could be Miss Wales, and I think that I am perfect for the role, and that's taken me years. If I'm completely honest, when I've competed before, I've never thought of myself as the actual title holder because I didn't think I was ready. Now, at, you know, 25, I having all this life experience, I know when I'm competing now, it's not about what the pageant can do for me, it's what I can do for other people, and I'm bringing something to it. So that's why I think that in this circumstance, going into Miss Wales, I do actually feel like I could be someone that could carry out the role in the way that it needs to be carried out, because once you've won the title, it's more important than ever to carry on with all the work you've been doing. You don't just win and then you're finished, you've won the crown. It's like a job role for a year until you hand over to the next girl. It's your job to be a role model and to get involved with things that happen in a community or further afield. I'm someone that can't not speak up about things. I think there's all sorts going on in the world, and I think it's important as a pageant girl, especially if you're a title holder, to speak up on those causes and be someone that has a voice. I recently did a social media campaign about what would you do with your voice, and for me, that's one of the most important things. Like, what messages do you want to spread? What can you do with your voice? How can you help someone? It could be something so simple. It could be something just giving people compliments or reaching out to people that you think may be struggling in lockdown and saying, how are you? How are you coping? Do you want a video chat? You can use your voice, you know, in a much smaller setting and really help people around you. Or you can speak out on huge causes and, you know, I like to cause a scene to get stuff done. I like to, you know, I like to make my voice heard, and I like to make sure that people know what I stand for. But that's the type of person I am. I can't keep quiet when I think there's something that's an injustice, and I've always been like that. And again, that's something I've definitely got from my mother. I remember being a child, and where we lived, it was kind of, there was lots of young families all together with lots of young children all in the same area. We had a park just across from our house. So everyone would hang around, like just in front of our house. So we'd see people getting bullied or you know, fights start or something like that between children. And if there was someone really being picked on and bullied, my mum would be straight out there. She'd be like, what are you doing to that boy? She's like, you leave that boy alone. And then she'd be like, you don't listen to them. You're amazing. So it's, I've always, you know, I've always seen this kind of storm of positivity, well, you know, as a child. And I definitely think that's something that I've just grown up with. And it's who I am now. I can't, you know, I can't change myself. I'm just a whirlwind. And I appreciate that.
Wouldn't want you to change that. The world needs more of that. That's awesome.
Oh, thank you.
So before we wrap up here, tell us what's next for you. What are you working on? What are your goals? Where can we see you, find you? What's in the future for you?
So my next steps, currently we don't have, lots of things have been put off. So in terms of the Safe Foundation, we've got trips that have been held off. So there may be a potential for me to go on a trip. It just depends on, you know, what's going on and who else is available. But one of the big things that I'm planning on doing, and Safe Foundation already kind of have resources that can help me do this, is all of these lessons I've learned around the world and all of these experiences, I want to bring that to the children of Wales, and I want to get them involved in, you know, a bit of what the Safe Foundation do. So I'd love to be able to do this as a Miss Wales. But next year, certainly when we're back in, I mean, it's almost ready to go. So I could have done this year had it not been for lockdown. But now, it'll probably be next year now. I want to bring some sessions into schools. So I've got a list of all the schools in Wales. And I'll do a tour over time. So obviously with work commitments as well, it'll be quite spread out. But I do want to get around to schools in different areas and just educate them on not only what's going on in Wales, but what's going on in other countries. Ask them how they're feeling. Ask them to get critical. I think critical thinking is so important to change. How are we ever supposed to change anything if we're all just, you know, watching it go by? It's happened. Oh, well, I can't do anything about that. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, someone else will deal with that. Someone else will make that change. It's down to all of us. We're all responsible. And we all have different skill sets to bring to it. But I think the first step is critically thinking about, why is this the way it is? What's happened for this to go wrong? What can we do to make a change? What do we want to do in our area? How can we spread that further afield? So I think just getting children thinking about it at early age, hopefully will bring a generation of people that are, you know, super active about it. It's not enough to understand the issue. We have to get active. We have to do something about it. Recently for me, I've spoken up quite a lot as well. It's not just gender equality, but racial equality. I think, I don't think I could let this interview go by, to be honest, without just touching upon that briefly either, because something that is in front of our faces in the world is this racial inequality that is happening everywhere. And I think most people watching this will have seen over social media what events have occurred recently and will see different opinions. But for me, as someone who understands my privilege, also understands that it's not enough to just notice it's happening, and it's not enough just to, you know, say, oh, I understand it. It's, well, we need to be part of the fight and we need help as well. So I think over the next coming months, there's lots of things I want to teach about. So I think I'm going to bring an element of gender equality and maybe hints of racial equality into a workshop. Speak to different schools and see if we can get out there. I think it's so important to engage with the youth. As far as I'm aware, there's nothing really quite like that in Wales at the moment. So it would be something that is incredible to do. In terms of Miss Wales, I'm not sure what's happening because we don't currently have a date because it's been postponed. But I'd love to be able to do that as an involvement with Miss Wales as well in some way. But it just depends on timings. But if anyone wants to follow that journey and see what I'm up to, I post quite regularly on my Instagram. So that's just Sadie Pullman. so you can find everything I'm doing up there. I'll post such a range of things. So if there's something that I feel is important in the moment, it definitely will be on my stories. Then I'll create posts. I recently did a post about domestic violence, which I know has, you know, it's increased tenfold during lockdown. It's awful. It's awful what's happening. And I think the lockdown situation has created this perfect hub for perpetrators to be acting on these things. And that is something we need to highlight. And someone I know quite well has done lots of fundraising for that. And that's been incredible. So that's something I've spoken about recently. And that's been incredible because I've actually managed to help. I mean, I've posted links to where you can find help and chats and phone numbers and websites for people who don't, you know, want to say to me, oh, I'm struggling with this. I know people, I know from my own situations in the past, you don't always want to speak up and tell people you know about it. You want another source of neutral, you know, someone neutral to speak to about it. But I have had a couple of people that have opened up to me as well. So that's been lovely that I can, you know, help in certain situations. There's so much we can do with our social media. There's so much we can do every single day. We just have to go that extra step and let people know that we're there. And I know we don't always all have the time and capacity to go to extreme lengths, but just, you know, lending an ear or just putting a post to let someone know you care about them and stand with them on calls. You don't know who you can touch and who it can mean something to. So yeah, go and look at my social media. You'll see everything I'm about.
And we'll link to your social media in the notes for the podcast and the video. Cool. And as we promote both, we'll link to them as well. And we would encourage everybody to take a look because we follow you. And you have a really great account. Actually, it's really quite varied. There's activism. There's great personal stuff. There's a lot of things about feminism. There's a lot of thing, you know, like positive femininity posts. We highly recommend people follow you. So we'll make sure to promote.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. This has been the hour has flown by. It's
Has it been an hour? Oh my God.
Yeah, already it's been an hour. I can't believe it. Yeah.
I probably haven't let you get a word in. I'm so sorry.
Nobody wants to hear me. People want to hear you. So thank you very much for that.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I've had a lot of fun getting to word vomit and tell you everything about my life.
Awesome. No, we appreciate that. So we'll be putting this together in the next little while, and then we'll send you copies and stuff. But everybody stay tuned for our podcast or YouTube. We'll put it up on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter as well. So stay tuned. We'll be out shortly with it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Oh, thank you. And you.
Thank you very much. Take care.